Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mehler here. We're starting the show today by talking about the life and legacy of Electa Quinney. Electa Quinney was Wisconsin's first public school teacher, and we have available an absolutely wonderful video produced by David Baffa, who is with me in the studio, education producer for PBS Wisconsin. And Monique Tyndall, we're hoping to reach her as well. Monique is the cultural affairs director with the Stockbridge Muncie Band of the Mohican Indians. And so we're efforting on her, and we'll do our best to get her into the conversation. So Electa Quinney is our first teacher, was the first teacher here in Wisconsin. And so the video that David produced talks about her history, Mohican history. And as we visit with David and hopefully with Monique, I hope you'll join in. Let us know maybe about the community builders who are bringing your town together. Tell us about what you may know about Electa Quinney. You can reach us. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. David Baffa, welcome.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you with us. So why is it important for us to know about Electa Quinney?
That's a great question. I think there are a variety of reasons. Probably the biggest one is representation for the Stockbridge Muncie people. They have an active reservation up in Shawano County in Wisconsin, and they have an important figure in Wisconsin state history, and it's important that we tell that story, and it was important for us to tell the story in a way that they were involved and proud of and would want to share themselves. So Electa is a deep part of Wisconsin history. She's a part of Stockbridge Muncie history. And also, we've been hearing from teachers for many years to tell her story.
Well, that's good to know. So others know about or knew about her.
Oh, yeah, certainly. So certainly within the educator sphere, right? So this is a resource primarily intended for third through sixth graders, although we know that they're used by people younger and older. We had one educator say she used them with her college students. But we're working primarily with upper elementary and middle school students and educators. And, you know, if you're a teacher, you might know about the first teacher, the first known teacher in the state where you're teaching. So Electa was a candidate we'd heard about for years, certainly before my time at PBS Wisconsin. And we were really excited to be able to bring this story out.
And I assume she's remembered very well in the Stockbridge Muncie community.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When we were working with them, because this was really a co-production with them, we were working with them as co-authors. We were working with them as artists. They were giving feedback on every step of the way. This is somebody, it was clear through all our conversations and all our work, that this is someone who is still very important to them. And not just for her role as an educator, but as somebody who was seen as a mentor in the community, somebody who was connected to other individuals before her who were very important to the community and who whose descendants were very important within the community. So for a lot of reasons, she's very important still for the Stockbridge Muncie.
So I imagine you went to them for help and information, as you suggest here, but what was this whole process like?
So we have to go back about 2 years, and some work had begun on this bio, and then Monique, who is the cultural affairs director for Stockbridge Muncie, basically told us, here is how you can do this with our approval and with our participation. And so we said, all right, tell us what to do. We developed a game plan, and really it meant working with Monique and the Stockbridge Muncie community to write job postings, for example. So who are going to be our co-authors from the community? Postings for artists. Who's going to create some of the art? Who's going to create the bead art? Postings for people to help with any language elements. Postings for people to serve as a liaison between our community and the Stockbridge Muncie. And that was a long process. We got some great applicants. And then we also did some community listening session where we went to their reservation and we invited as many people as wanted to show up and just listen to them tell us what's important to you in this story. What do you want to see? And then we took that, and with our co-authors from Stockbridge Munsee, there were two of them, I started writing the story with them. We started writing it collaboratively, as well as developing the art collaboratively and developing the bead art collaboratively. And every step of the way, we would try to get feedback and approval, including up to the, you know, the final stages, basically, that were happening just a few months ago. And I should mention the voiceover artist, too, a Stockbridge Munsee woman did the narration. Yeah,
a very nice job of that, too. And the result, the video, is what? I watched it a couple of times, actually. About 7 minutes long? Something?
I think it's just under 7 minutes, if you include, yeah, some of the intro bumper and the credits and things. But, yeah, so there was a lot to pack into just under 7 minutes.
I was amazed at how much I learned in 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So what was one of the things the Stockbridge Munsee community said over and over is we want to tell the Stockbridge Munsee story, the Mohican story, as much as we can in addition to Electa's story and show that Electa, as extraordinary as she was not a one-off, was not an outlier in terms of a woman in her community who was highly educated, who was looking out for her community, and who had a profound impact on her community. So we did what we could to incorporate elements of Mohican history and other figures in Mohican history.
Let's talk about the Mohican history. And I loved how, I didn't love how it happened, but I did love how you portrayed it. And give us a sense of the Mohican history. It started out east.
Yeah, so they are a community originally from the area, kind of in the Hudson River Valley, which for me from the East Coast makes sense. But if you don't know the area, that means kind of like New York State, Massachusetts, parts of Vermont, Connecticut, maybe even a little bit of New Jersey. That's their ancestral homeland. And in the 1600s, before European contact, their community numbers in the thousands. And it's a thriving community. They're hunting. They're practicing sort of rotational agriculture, I think. And then the Europeans arrive, and within a few decades, you know, by the early 1700s, the community is reduced to a few hundred people. I mean, it was really rapid how quickly there was this destruction of their community. To respond to this, they basically decide to start living alongside some English colonists in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. And they, what's amazing about their story over and over, and this is something, again, that really came from my Stockbridge partners, is their ability to adopt strategies for survival in the face of overwhelming pressures not to survive. So when they move to live alongside the English, they adopt certain non-native European traditions, but also maintain many of their native traditions. They keep hunting, for example. They keep making maple sugar, but they also start practicing what might be considered more European-style agriculture. Unfortunately, none of these efforts are really enough to satisfy the colonial individuals and the settlers, and they end up, you know, despite siding, for example, with the colonists in the Revolutionary War, they're kicked out of their homes. You know, returning,
I think they
soldiers
were promised that they would be able to keep the homes.
They were told they could keep their land and their homes for siding with us. They were promised this, and that was broken. I mean, they came back. Many of the men died, unfortunately, and those who came back found that their homes had been taken. So at that point, they have to do another move, this time to the Oneida Reservation in New York. And again, they adopt strategies for survival, strategies for continuing to preserve their culture, even while they adopt some elements of European culture when it's beneficial to them. And that is not enough, because they're ultimately forced to move to Wisconsin starting in the 1820s.
And they moved to what, let's see, Kaukauna, the Kaukauna area?
So initially, the area they moved to is the Kaukauna area, exactly. It was a city or a town called Statesburg at the time. And that's where, like, De Quinney moved in 1828.
And let's go back to her because I'm trying to remember the history on this, but when she was born, she was sent, and after a time when I forget how old she was, but she was sent off to school, essentially.
Yeah, so this is another element of Mohican strategies for survival and efforts to resist colonization efforts, right? And this actually starts with the generation before Electa. A group of Mohican women decide that they need to be more well-versed in colonial European educational ways and legal systems and whatnot. And they had a school in Stockbridge, but they decided they needed better schooling for their young girls specifically. And the Quaker community, this religious community, was one of the few communities that was educating boys and girls. And so the Mohicans decide to pair with the Quakers and send some of their young women to learn and live alongside the Quakers. And Electa is part of the second generation, essentially, that is sent. So Mary Peters Dockstetter was another Stockbridge woman who was sent. She comes back with these skills and opens up a school for young girls. It's very productive. They're weaving and spinning, I believe, and they share their profits with the community to help the whole community. And then Electa, again, she's a little bit younger. She is sent to a similar Quaker school as well as another school where we think she gets training as a teacher.
So, and this is contrasted, I think, with the other schools that Indians were sent off to.
Yeah. So, and this is, you know, this is a sensitive issue, and I want to acknowledge that I'm not a Native individual, and that there are a lot of different views by Native people on some of whom had personal experience with boarding schools. We know they were terrible. We know they were genocidal in many ways. The schools that we're talking about were, one, they were schools where you were living alongside other Quaker children. And what the Stockbridge Muncie community stressed, and my co-authors stressed, as well as people who are researching the community, is that this was a choice by the Stockbridge Mohican women. And they saw it as a, again, a means of survival. So what I think has been really important and encouraging is returning some agency and control to this community as they try to counter all this land theft and land grabs. The unfortunate result is that New York State governments and businesses and settlers were going to ended up taking things no matter what. But the Mohicans did everything they could to secure their lands to some extent, to preserve their traditions, and the decision to cooperate and work with the Quakers was one of those strategies, basically. And again, interestingly, undertaken primarily by the Mohican women in the community.
And do we know much about the actual education process with the Quakers? I mean, would they learn alongside the Quaker children? Or?
Oh, yeah. They would live with them. They would learn alongside them, and they would learn the same skills. So I'm not an early America education expert, but we know they learned things like arithmetic, reading, because these were young girls, they would also learn things like sewing. But it was a rigorous education. We have some textbooks from that period, and I'd struggle with some of these textbooks. But yeah, it was, there were things too that we don't learn anymore, right? Like, I think cartography maybe was one, penmanship, but rhetoric. But yeah, it was a really rigorous education, as well as in terms of academics, but also practical matters like spinning, weaving, making butter, cheese, things like that.
Our guest today, David Baffa, the education producer for PBS Wisconsin, and produced a marvelous video on our guest, well, not our guest, but the person we're talking about today, Electa Quinney. She was Wisconsin's first teacher, and the video does just an absolutely wonderful job of talking about the Mohican tribe and the her ascendancy to become the first teacher in our state. Questions or comments, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800 642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Clara Neipert is our producer today. A. Emily Ralph, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here visiting with David Baffa, education producer for PBS Wisconsin. Has produced a fabulous video that you actually will have a chance, or you can, take a look at it right now, as a matter of fact. I believe we have a link on the Larry Mueller Show page to go to ideas@WPR.org/Larry and click on that video. It's about just under 7 minutes about the life of the person that who Electa Quinney, who is being featured in the video, and she was definitely Wisconsin's first public school teacher. And great to have David with us. Questions again, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@WPR.org. Emailer wonders, why did Mohicans adopt part of European life?
So in some cases it was, I want to say there were probably a variety of reasons, right? In some instances they probably felt compelled to. In some instances it was what's beneficial for our ways of life. So that might be access to different tools, right? Or different farming practices. And they were survival strategies in many cases. It was, and at least early on, there was a sense that they could adopt some, but not all. So in Stockbridge, for example, there were Mohicans who chose to live in wood frame houses. There were Mohicans who chose to live in wigwams, which is their traditional housing style. So it was, they were conscious decisions in many cases to essentially preserve as much as possible their way of life, while also staying attentive to the fact that their population had shrunk by like a factor of 10 or something.
Amazing. And what does history tell us about the importance of education to their culture?
So it becomes very clear that for the Stockbridge Munsee, education is critical. And I want to emphasize this was Native education as well as a strong non-Native education. So I'll just give one example for Electa. She had three sons, one of whom went to fight in the Civil War. And we have letters from him to his mother. Sadly, we don't have her responses, but we have letters that he wrote, and he talks about, how do I look in this picture? How are things going back home? And in one, he talks about all the soldiers getting sick, right, around him. And he asks, what can you suggest for this sickness, right? So Electa is well-versed in reading, writing, arithmetic, right? The sort of classic school education, right? But very clearly, she also has experience with traditional medical treatments, let's say, right? So clearly, you know, her son looks to her for this information as a young man. Sadly, he ends up dying a few months later of, I think it's pneumonia, right? Like these Civil War camps, that was probably the most common way to die, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But it's very clear that he looked to her for this advice. One other thing I'll add is another son of hers goes on to become Wisconsin's first Native lawyer. And he's involved in trying to get recognition for the Stockbridge people in Wisconsin. So education over and over. Her brother is a great diplomat and has a beautiful speech about the ways his people have been wronged. So there are a variety of ways where education really asserts it's important for the Stockbridge Munsee community over the centuries.
I didn't see anything about her husband. Was she married to a Mohican?
She was married twice. She was married initially to a Mohawk individual who was a missionary, I believe, primarily to the Seneca Nation. And all her sons were with this individual. he dies, unfortunately, and she then remarries a man who was a Cherokee printer. And so he was involved in printing a variety of materials, including things that were in both the Cherokee language and in English. So she is married twice. She has three sons with the first marriage. Unfortunately, both husbands perish. Yeah, exactly. Both die before she does. She lives until probably around 80.
Yeah, it's. I was interested to see that she lived a long, very long life.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the setting up of this school. How did this develop? That okay, you're in the Kaukauna area, or what became Kaukauna, I guess, and there's a need recognized to have a school. So do we know how it all transpired?
You know, I'm sure some of those details are out there, some of which I've probably forgotten. But what would have happened is the community recognized the need for a school, and this is why we consider it the first public school. It's paid for by the community. So the community recognizes the need, and they build this log school and decide that they need people teaching there. So these were community decisions. The same thing, interestingly, had happened when they were out east in Stockbridge and New Stockbridge, I believe. They had schools there as well. And so clearly this was important to them, to have a school for their young people. And in the other thing I'll add about the school in Kaukauna, what is now Kaukauna, is it was open to Native and non-Native children. So she was teaching people from both backgrounds.
And sometimes class sizes of 50.
Was it?
Yeah, I was reading. She had up to 50 pupils at one time.
I don't doubt. I don't doubt it. I think she is somebody who was an educator just in her core, and she would have had to stop teaching when she had a family. Probably this was just the way most young women were expected to raise families. You stopped working and teaching. You focus on the family. But there are so many accounts from the rest of her life from other people that suggest she's still basically an educator at heart and still somebody deeply in love with learning and teaching and sharing knowledge.
It's an amazing story from my perspective and from a lot of perspectives. And I love the way you treated this story in the video. One thing that really struck me was the animated beadwork. But just talk about the entire thing. But the beadwork was really striking to me and how it animated.
Yeah. So the animation is beautiful. It's extraordinary. I want to give a huge thanks to the animation team here at PBS Wisconsin. They did an amazing, amazing job. And I want to also acknowledge our Native partners. So we had two Native artists we were working with. One was a traditional bead artist from the Stockbridge Muncie community. So she works with beads, beads. She does beadwork designs, and she provided we have beadwork now in PBS Wisconsin Education. Beautiful beadwork frames that found their way into the animation. And she also just drew designs for us. And one of our animators, who focused just on the beads, she animated those. So she, transformed that physical beadwork or designs into digital beads that you see animating throughout the video. And then we worked with another Native artist from Canada. We couldn't find somebody from Stockbridge Muncie, so we worked with Monique to find another artist who she felt was appropriate given the community. And so she designed the figures and the backgrounds and the art style that you see throughout that, again, our team animated. And all of this, of course, was seen and reviewed and commented on by members of the community, the Stockbridge Muncie community. So the historical committee, for example, would get back to us and say, these moccasins are wrong here. This is not what we were wearing in the 1700s, or these dwellings are wrong. They would just give feedback on here is what we know, where our expertise comes in, to make this animation as accurate as possible.
Well, it's beautifully done. I love the way the movement in the video is so wonderful.
It's really great. We, you know, we conceived of this beadwork idea, again, working with our collaborators at Stockbridge Munsee. And I think we weren't sure, is this going to work? What's this going to look like? We, to my knowledge, hadn't done anything like this before. And once we started doing the tests, we were just like, okay, this is going to work. And then seeing it all come together is really, really rewarding. And we got great feedback and great responses from the community as well.
Yeah. Beadwork has to be an important... Can you talk about that to any extent?
A little bit. So beadwork's very important to the Stockbridge Munsee, and historically it was important. And just, you know, to comment on how important it was that we had Stockbridge Munsee partners... they were able to provide us with information on historically appropriate beadwork too. They could say, these are designs that would be appropriate before this date. These are more modern designs that might be appropriate later. The beadwork is an element that exists sort of outside of time in the video, if you've seen it, right? It provides accents in certain places. So we weren't always going for X year means we can only use this style, but we could make sure that those facts informed our aesthetic decisions. And yeah, there's no way we would have known that or been able to figure that out without our partners.
It's interesting. I wondered what the significance of, I mean, does the beadwork in a way tell a story, or is for the Mohican?
So the beadwork in a few places, it is meant as a way to enhance what you're hearing or what you're seeing. So when, for example, we have the scene of Stockbridge Munsee girls with the Quaker family and they're learning, for example, weaving, that cloth design is meant to incorporate some Quaker designs and some Stockbridge Mohican designs to show that this is a combination of native and non-native education that they're getting. Later on, when the Stockbridge Mohicans are undergoing the forced removal to Wisconsin, the beadwork that trails them is meant to represent their culture. The idea that they could take very few possessions with them when they're doing this journey from New York to Wisconsin, but they could carry their culture with them. And so that's what the beadwork is meant to show there. So in a few cases, the beadwork is really, it's more than just an accent. It's meant to signify something about the story.
And Electa, you found there's only one known photograph of her, I guess.
Yeah, so this was one of the challenges, is that Electa is really not super well documented in a way that would be helpful for telling a biography. We don't have a firm birth date. We don't have a firm death date. We don't know a whole lot about her childhood, aside from the schooling. There are years that are just kind of lost at this point. People have done great archival research. The Stockbridge Munsee community has done great work figuring out, you know, her lineage or bits of her story, but we don't have a lot of details. And in a number of cases, we have letters to her. We don't have her responses, and they would be amazing. We can infer certain responses in some cases, but it'd be amazing to have her responses to a lot of these letters.
Monique Tyndall, who we would love to have had today, but weren't able to reach her, she's the cultural affairs director of the Stockbridge. Can you talk about the kind of things that she does and what is available for me to go up and see if I want to?
Sure. So she does a lot. She does, you know, everything in some sense, I believe. But she is concerned with, among other things, making sure if media requests come through, if people are working on Stockbridge Munsee projects, she is a point of contact. She can put you in touch with people. She can provide resources. And she's overseeing a degree of control, or at least oversight in terms of how Stockbridge Mohicans are represented and making sure that they are approving of their representation and that they're involved in it too, right? And we gave a presentation at a conference a few months ago, and she starts by pointing out how there's a history of Native peoples being represented and having no say in it, right? There's just people make media about them and there's no... There's no including them. There's no even checking in with them. Monique is there to make sure it's being done in a way that's culturally appropriate and that involves the community. And that was our goal, was to use this inclusive production model that incorporates as many members of the community as possible, as partners, as collaborators. If you were to want to go see Stockbridge Mohican artifacts or learn about the history, if you're in Wisconsin, you could go to the Arvid E. Miller Museum, which is on their reservation in Shawnee County. It's right by Bowler, I believe. If you're on the East Coast, they also, I think, have some resources out there. That's where their ancestral homelands were. So if you're in the New York State or Vermont or Massachusetts area, you could see things there as well.
So the opportunity, I think a lot of people are going to be encouraged or inspired to look more carefully or detailed into this as a result of the video that you produced.
I think we all really hope so. So there's the video. I should note, too, there's also an image gallery. And this is for all of our bios. There's an image gallery that has captions to explain the images. There's a digital book that also has an audio read-along for early readers or people who want to use the audio book. And there's an educator guide. Again, same for all of our biographies. So the video is a great starting point. It's beautiful. It's entertaining. And then you have other resources to learn more. And yeah, I hope that people look at this as a way to think about, all right, how can I learn more about Native history in Wisconsin broadly, Stockbridge-Munsee history, or Native history wherever people are living.
So how do people get access to what you just described?
If you go to pbswisconsineducation.org, you can click on the link for biographies, or you can go to pbswisconsineducation.org/biographies. And each bio, if you just click on the bio, will take you to these resources. You just scroll down and you can see the video. There will be the digital book right there. There will be a link for educator resources. The image gallery will be right there as well. So all of them will be on that biography page.
And I'll mention right now that we'll post links as well on the Larry Mueller Show page. So ideas at WPR.org/Larry. I know lots of people are used to going there. And go to today's date, and under the comments section, you'll find it. One of the pieces we haven't talked about yet that I did want to mention is the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell us about the music.
So we were very lucky, again, to have a Stockbridge-Munsee partner in that. Brent Michael Davids is a film composer. He's a composer, he's a musician, and he agreed to work on the score for this and provided a beautiful, personalized score for the video. He scored all 6-ish minutes of it, and it's great. The video looks beautiful, and when I first heard it, certainly, with the music, with the score, and with the sound design, I was really blown away. And I'd been in the weeds on it for 2 years, so.
Well, David, you have produced a wonderful video here, and I hope, as you say, that it leads to people being more interested in wanting to learn more about it. And I wanted to, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
I wanted to close with that song. Because I think it's ideal. And let's close. And David, again, thank you so much. David Baffa is the education producer for PBS Wisconsin.
She came here to teach us. Her spirit still reaches. Electa, you taught us so well. We are A. Her spirit still reaches. Electa, you taught us so well. We are.